Hey, this is episode 38 of Teaching, Learning, Leading, K-12, and today's topic is Protecting the Performing Arts. Over the last 10 years, starting really with AYP, and then moving into the race to the top world and this very focused environment of so-called reforms, many schools and school systems, because of incredible loss of funds, have had to cut performing arts programs. And so today what we're going to delve into are the reasons why we should protect them and why they're definite needs, just right up there with math and science and all those STEM programs, why performing arts are just as important to kids.
They're not here for us. We're here for them. That's what it's about. Kids.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is all about assisting classroom teachers and school administrators to overcome the many walls or barriers that kids face. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is focused on helping you help kids achieve their dreams. We provide resources and ideas to assist you in working with the kids. This show is published and produced weekly and is interview-based, but sometimes the shows are simply me looking at a topic in depth and detail. If there is a topic you would like me to look into for a future podcast, please let me know at smoletto.hg@gmail.com. As a note, I hope that you will stop by Stitcher or iTunes and leave me a star rating and a comment. That helps the show get noticed by more people. Thanks for listening and joining me week after week. I hope that you will share us with colleagues, friends, and family. And most of all, I'm wishing you the very best and enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
You know, I got to tell you something. I'm a former band kid. I was in band, learned the trumpet. I started playing the trumpet, taking private lessons in the fourth grade. When I was at elementary school, I actually attended an elementary school where the music teacher had an after-school music program. We did music during the day, which was singing and playing different instruments and things like this, but she actually took it upon herself to create a after-school band. And so it was we were a pretty good-sized elementary school, but she put together a group, and she wasn't given lessons. We took private lessons. But we had several performances at the school over the couple of years before moving on to the junior high. Yeah, it kind of shows my age because those are the days of the junior highs and no middle schools yet. So that meant that in elementary school, we went through the sixth grade as opposed to, in elementary schools today going through only the fifth grade. So anyway, we had this after-school band and we had different performances and she had us playing all kinds of different music, show tunes and so forth. And it was a lot of fun. And, basically it helped instill in me. Now, you have to know that I had a father who played a trumpet. He had his own band at one time where he played trumpet in all kinds of different music they played. Also had several relatives who played different instruments as throughout the years as they were growing up. But I was kind of infatuated with the trumpet and wanted to play like one of my heroes, Herb Alpert or Al Hurt. And give me long enough and I'll name them all for you. But the point is that music became something that I liked and I wanted to be part of and I wanted to know, be able to do it better, I guess is what my point is. How many of you played instruments? How many of you still play instruments? You know, it's funny because I started back in fourth grade and I got to tell you, I didn't know that back in fourth grade when I started playing the trumpet, that it would come in handy one day as a principal. Because what happened was I started using it to help me help the kids get to know who I was because I'd play in the stands in the marching band. during marching season. That was a blast because they let you be 16 again. You get up there, play your music, have fun, do the little dances and all kinds of stuff. What a blast. I didn't know that it would come in handy all those years. I played for a little bit in college, too, and it's just been a nice release. And I still love the music, and I still like to get it out once in a while and practice and play. Well, unfortunately, a lot of our fine arts programs, especially the performing arts programs today, have been reduced in strength or have limited support, and partly because over the last 20-some-odd years, it's gotten worse over the years. That there's been a political drive that says that everybody has to take math and science. Not that there's anything wrong with math and science. That's not my point. The point is that thinking that music doesn't have a place in schools, or that and by the way, when I'm saying music, I don't mean just music, because I'm talking about programs from chorus, band, orchestra to theater and dance, even visual arts. There's been this drive to say, you need to use the money for something less frivolous. Well, I got to tell you, these programs aren't frivolous. And what it takes is a real dedication by the school administration, as well as the system level, to kind of do what they can to protect. Because if you're in a community that desires to have these programs, it's upon us to try and figure out how to create and save and protect these programs. Because I got to tell you something. Not everybody wants to be in some sort of program or some sort of education pathway that leads you down the road to being a heavy math user. And it's unfortunate because we have a political arena that thinks that the way that you go about making more engineers is that you just tell the kids you got to take more math, you got to take more science. That's how we do it. Well, you still have kids that are interested in other things. And, there's many other majors. I was a history major, plus I like music. I wasn't a music major. Music's always been a release for me. It's always been something fun. I like college football, but I got to tell you something. I really wish that they showed the marching bands instead of going to the commentary during halftime on TV, I'm talking about. But, it's just music's all around us. And I got to tell you something. And once again, I just to make sure that I'm talking about all the performing arts, not just music. But I have a music history, and so it kind of comes to pass that's the area that I focus on. What about you? Do you see this happening? I got to tell you, one of the things that I think is so cool is that there's this this idea that this is not the cool part. I mean, but there's this idea from political forces that you have to, you just have to focus on one area, that you just got to be a mathematician or you just got to be a scientist, as opposed to the idea that maybe you could be a mathematician, maybe you could be an engineer, maybe you could be a scientist and you actually like music also, which means that we would need that in schools. I mean, when our public high schools were redesigned, at the last turn of the century, not the most current one, but the one previous to that, from the 1800s to the 1900s, what they were trying to do was figure out the types of coursework to offer. As what was happening where the farms were being taken over, where actually the amount of farm labor that was needed was not as huge as it was at one time during the Industrial Revolution. And so what it did was it drove a lot of people from the agricultural areas into the urban areas. And they're like, oh my gosh, we're going to have to do something about this because we need people to go beyond elementary school level. We need people to go beyond the eighth grade level also. We need people, we need to be able to have offerings that will allow kids to be able to figure out what it is that they'd like to do when they grow up, when they leave school. And so they developed the high school. I think it's funny because we have a lot of people today who like to talk about how the public high school, the comprehensive high school, was designed during a time of factory. And that's why the bell system and all that. Well, yeah, that may be the case. But what they're really missing, though, is why the curricular structures were designed the way they are. Now, I'm not talking about getting into the, whether chemistry should come before biology or biology should come before chemistry. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the idea that we should offer many, many different types of courses so that kids have a chance to experience different aspects of what could be their future, so that what happens inside them is that they start thinking about, I could see me doing this. I like mixing chemicals. I like the idea that you can make hydrogen gas out of this, that, and the other. Or, you know what? I enjoy studying poetry. Or I like writing a story. Or how about, you know, being able to look back in history and learn from the past, or you know, I'm really into anatomy and physiology, or the biology sciences, or astronomy. You know, just there's any number of things. You know, the mathematics, just they want to figure out math problems, or they want to, you know, get into the, you know, in studying astronomy, they want to figure out the mathematical formulas that allow us to, you know, safely send a person to Mars instead of just robots. You know, there's any number of things. And beyond that, we have all the electives, the different programs, whether you call them electives or specials, you know, everything from business classes to music classes to dance classes, you know, the performing arts to visual arts to other programs, just any number of things like JRTC and robotics and just different types of activities that the kids can participate in. And I know I left out a whole bunch. Forgive me, but because there are a whole bunch. Well, the whole reason why those were put into our schools was so that kids had a chance to experience and think about what they might want to do after school, where they might want to move on, what they might want to study, and what they might want to do as an adult. You know, it's such a simple idea that so many people have just attacked. Everybody thinks that this, that, or the other is a simple key. Well, it's not so simple. And without going too far astray, what I want to focus on today is the idea that as a result of some of these directions towards, and I want to say that they're well-meaning, but the idea of we need to double up on math, or we need to double up on English, or you know, we need to create this program or that program, is all fine and good unless it's at the expense of programs like performing arts or the visual arts. Because they need your help and they need your focus, because without it, without hearing from you that this is something that you want and desire that our kids should be able to participate in, they'll easily go away. You know, I have children who also play the trumpet. And one of the things that at a not too distant past at a exhibition, there was a college guest conductor there who at the end of the performance, and he was from a major university out in the central part of the United States. And he made a plea to all the parents. He said, "I need to tell you something." He said, "You need to pay attention that many of the fine arts programs are going away in the schools," and that they were feeling it at the college level as it was impacting the number of kids that they were getting. And what he was pleading for was that parents would you know, let their voices be heard, that performing and visual arts are important and need to be protected. What do you think about this? I mean, what are your thoughts? It's, you know, I know it's not easy when dealing with budgets. Something has to go sometimes. And you know, with all the cuts that have taken place over the last bunch of years, there's always something that needs to be cut or reduced, or, you know, simply adjusted the number of classes offered in some area. No matter what it is, I got to tell you, though, we've got to figure out how to keep the fine arts available for kids to participate in their schools. You know, one of the things that happened in my own career, I ran into a situation where a predecessor had eliminated most of the fine arts, the performing arts programs, or at least not eliminated the programs, but what he had done was reduced them to part-time. And he made the excuse that it was all because we had to offer more math or something like this. And that's nuts, because simple logic would tell you that you got to take a look at your whole schedule. If the kids are asking for this, then let's look at what classes the kids aren't asking for. You know, in a high school setting, a lot of times what happens is that the counselors will, you know, they're directed to fill classes. And so as the kids had put in their requests, if they can't get their request because it's not offered at the right time, or the classes that they needed are not offered that semester or something, they have to go someplace. And so oftentimes the classes that kids are not requesting is where those kids go, and they fill them up that way. Well, if we change that model and we say, instead of holding up classes that the kids aren't requesting, why don't we look over the last couple years? How about, can we go back 3? Can we go back 5 years and look at the numbers of kids that are requesting certain classes? Are those requests staying stable? Are they going up or are they going down? And I got to tell you, I did this and used that to justify eliminating some other classes that the kids were not taking. They did not request them. They did not want them. And the only reason why they survived is because the counselors took kids and put them in those classes so that they would be full. Well, I'm not a big supporter of that. Matter of fact, in wanting to build and give my focus on rebuilding the programs in the fine arts at that school, I knew that one of the things that had to happen was I needed the ability to offer full-time positions, because what had happened before was that they had reduced. I mean, the band director wasn't full-time. The orchestra teacher wasn't full-time. The chorus teacher wasn't full-time. The theater director wasn't full-time. And there wasn't dance. In the visual arts, they'd actually lost a whole teacher. And so what we did was we looked at how can we, I had a very smart scheduler who, she was very good at looking at these numbers. And I said, let's take a look at this and let's look at that data and let's figure out what classes really need to go. And when we found that information out from that the kids showed us, it was very telling. It made it simple. These classes need to go. These classes need to come back. And just to give you an idea, when you hire the right people and you put them in those positions, a band program that went from 33 kids to 123, 125 kids in just a few short years, approximately 4. And so the program was back to full strength. You know, and not just that program, orchestra, chorus, theater, all back to wonderful levels in a community that supported the fine arts, the performing arts, the visual arts. So what about yours? I mean, what goes on in your community? Do you have some of these types of issues? I mean, I've had to fight this battle, and I shouldn't talk about it in terms like fighting, actually. I mean, but, you know, you have to figure out a way of helping save and protect these types of programs. If, you know, you have to determine, is it important for my community? And if it is, and you look at that information, then you've got to make the hard choices to say, well, if it's important to my community, then that means that I need to figure out how to make it happen. It requires placing priorities, figuring out what is more important and what is less important. That is a difficult situation for some people because oftentimes they don't want to make anybody mad. They don't want to say, you know, your courses aren't being signed up for, so therefore you got to go. No, instead they want to be able to say, you know, I'm good with this. We'll just keep it as it is right now, and we'll have this small performing arts and teachers that are annoyed because they're only working part-time, and so they're constantly looking for a job, a full-time job somewhere else instead of wanting to stay in your system. And the kids just don't have the support for their programs, and they look at other schools and they kind of long and wish that they were there instead of where they are. So in, you know, kind of thinking about this, we have to figure out how we go about protecting them. Now, I'm not talking about rabble-rousing. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is that us as educators, when you're in these types of situations, if you're the leader, you have to look and make those hard choices. And like I said before, it's not easy to do that. Schools are meant to be places where kids are exploring the many different ideas and thoughts and concepts of potential careers. They have to be able to have offerings that allow them to really express, you know, what their inner desires are about, you know, their future, you know, their dreams that they want to achieve. What is it that they're dreaming of being in their future? Well, we need to be able to offer many of those courses, and to too many, especially people who are outsiders in the political arena, it just looks like it might be, you know, they want to say that it's fluff. It's not. Because if it was fluff, how about in the state of Georgia, we have an incredible university called Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech has one of the largest marching bands in the United States. Not only that, it also has theater. It also has jazz band, and it also has a concert band. But none of there are no music majors at Georgia Tech. You can't major in music. You can't major in performing arts there. But you can take these courses. Now, I don't know about you, but it doesn't take a brilliant mind to go, wow, if they offer those classes there and they pay people to teach these classes, the kids who are there must want those things. They must want to be in those programs. And you know what? Boom, you got the answer right there. So, wow, there's more to this thing about performing arts than just the idea that that there's no money for it, or that it might be a little more frivolous, or that we need more math classes. Especially if your mathematicians and your engineers want to perform, want to be part of these groups. Can you imagine the level of thinking at a school like Tech? All of them out there? That would be a band director's dream. Probably doesn't have to spend a whole lot of time telling them the difference between their left and their right. But what a cool thought. And an engineering school, fine arts, are celebrated. Wow. That kind of goes against the grain of what this whole direction of eliminating these types of programs. So, you know, if you're a leader in your school, what is it that you could do to help protect your fine arts programs? Have you taken a look? You know, because maybe you're in a community where that's not necessary. They don't need protecting. But you better look closely, because over the last 20 years, it's gotten worse and worse. You know, it's to the point where the programs have faded, because, you know, one of the things you have to have is you have to have not just the program in the high school, you have to have it in the feeder middle school. And you have to have a strong one. You have to make it so that the kids can take the courses and encourage them to do that. If not, they won't, and it'll disappear. If you don't hire smartly for those positions, then it'll disappear. You know, going back to my story that I told at the beginning, I started playing in fourth grade. I took private lessons, and my own elementary school had an after-school program. It didn't take up space during the school day. In the afternoon, we met in the cafeteria, and Ms. Hubert, who was our music teacher, who was just an incredible teacher, spent her extra time helping us put together a band in that elementary school. Wow, that was so cool. If you're a leader in an elementary school, would you take those steps maybe to make that happen? Is it possible that you could make that happen? Or is it not possible? How about at the middle school level? At the middle school level, oh my goodness, kids are really trying to figure out who they are, and they're trying to make their identity. And so many of them are looking for that thing that becomes their niche, that becomes their thing in school, the way they identify themselves. And music, fine arts, visual, performing arts, so often are what many of them lean towards. Have you noticed that in your school? Have you taken time to take a look at the different groups of kids, the different kids who are asking or who would like to have this or that type of class? What about it? Can you have a crucial conversation with yourself and say, do I have the intestinal fortitude to make the tough decisions to see if my community would like to have this and if I can keep these programs or not? You know, this is not meant to be a rally the troops type podcast. It's just meant to be a discussion about the reality that I got to tell you something. You know, music in itself is a nice release, but it's amazing if you go to many schools and you look at the caliber of kid that's in the music program or programs or performing arts programs, the dance, the theater, the singing and instrument playing. What you find is that you find the caliber is so, so high that many of them are focused. They set goals, and they are more disciplined than many other students because they have to in order to get better at the instrument they play or at the dance that they perform or you know, whatever it is that is their specialty. Wow. You know, it's in this time frame of, you know, we have so many different reality shows that have come and gone. Some have gone, but many are sticking around, like American Idol and The Voice and things like this. Shows like this, there's a scientific word, things like this. You know, it's really, is this a time when you want to cut singing? I mean, you know, unfortunately, we're, as local systems, we're very dependent on state money, especially when the local taxes or the local industry is not able to keep up with the demands or the size of the schools or the number of kids that have moved into the area. So what is it worth to you to try and help figure out how to protect and keep our performing arts in the schools? What do you think about this? Do you have any thoughts? You know, I think it's funny because in all the focus on STEM, one of the things that you'll hear now is that some people have decided to make the word STEAM, STEAM. Now, if you don't know, STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, mathematics, that we need to have a focus on that with the kids. And I don't disagree, believe me. I just think it's funny that now some have realized that maybe we should include the arts in there as well. And so they've changed it so that instead of just STEM, it's now STEAM, with the A standing for, yep, you got it, arts. I got to tell you something, you know, without music, I didn't go on to be a music major. That wasn't my focus. But what it did give me was it gave me a place where I learned leadership. I got to be a band officer. I got to help run the band. In the trumpet section, we had different activities. When we went to other schools, we had all kinds of leadership opportunities. And the band director spent time teaching us how to be good leaders. And today, so many band directors have just incredible, wonderful programs that they've created on leadership themselves, where they bring the kids in during the summer and they spend time with them, teaching them how to be a leader. There's not many other classes you can get that type of instruction from. But the discipline that it takes to learn how to play an instrument, the discipline that it takes to learn how to dance, to draw, to paint, to sculpt, that it takes to learn how to act and perform on stage in front of people. It's amazing the impact that it has on kids and the level of performance they have in their academic world simply because they have this other area that is something they want to participate in. Now, I'm not even talking about the kids who actually the performing arts are their and visual arts are their whole world. Because we do have kids like that. And are you going to tell me that they don't matter? Well, you know, it's something that, you know, in some places I've been, they've actually used the performing arts as a way to try and get parents riled up. So they come out and make announcements and say, it's going away. And then everybody would get angry. And so that would then allow them, you know, the ability to put some pressure on the local legislators to try and help find them some money to help keep those programs in place. I got to tell you, it would be very, very sad if many of these programs faded away and were allowed to. One of the wonders about our country is that you have the ability to go to school. You have the ability to make choices about your future. You have the ability to sculpt and build and, you know, pun intended there, sculpt, build, design your future. And so many of our kids, their future is centered around the performing and visual arts. And even if it's not centered around it, they enjoy being part of it. And that's why I gave you that example of the Georgia Tech fine arts programs. If it wasn't needed, Georgia Tech wouldn't offer it. Wouldn't have the staff, hire the staff that's necessary to have those performing groups and those visual arts teachers. Now, would they? No, I don't think so. They'd be putting that money somewhere else. So it must be something that's very important to many of their kids. And as you can tell it by the size, I mean, just go look at the size of their marching band. You can see them on the, well, that's right. Usually on TV, they tend not to show it. But if you go to a game, it'll rival so many of the D1 colleges that have music majors. Remember, they have no music majors. They're all engineering, science, technology, and business majors too. But, the point is that they have all these really non-traditional music people who love it, live it, and ensure that there are programs there at that school. Wow. Makes you think, doesn't it? And I hope that what you're thinking about now is, if you're a school leader, I hope that you'll sit back in your chair and you'll think, what am I protecting my performing arts program? Am I protecting my performing arts and my visual arts? Have I done everything I can to try and figure out how to expand it, or at least how to make sure that the kids have access multiple times during the day, so it's something that kids can take as classes? I challenge you to take a look at it. I encourage you to do what you can as a teacher and a school leader, a system leader, to figure out, to test the waters in your community and determine if it's something they want, how, find that way. How can we make it possible for our performing arts program, our visual arts programs to thrive, not just survive, but to thrive? Just some thoughts. Thanks for listening. Have an awesome, awesome day.
Hello, listeners. We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Teaching Learning Leading K-12 in the iTunes store. Check back often for updates and new material.
Hang tight, everyone. I'm going to let go of the wall.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the Heart of Georgia Precinct.